Network. Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Boris Johnson's been handed a humiliating result as MPs voted overwhelmingly to back the damning reports of his Partygate conduct. Speaking before the vote, another former Prime Minister, Theresa May, revealed why she voted in favour of the report.
To show that we all recognise the responsibility we have to the people we serve.
Valdo Calacani, who's been charged following a knife and van attack in Nottingham a week ago today, is due in court later this morning. More than 6 million people with disabilities will start to receive £150 cost of living payments from today. The payments are part of a wider package of cost of living support for the most vulnerable households. A rescue operation is underway in search of a submarine that carries people to see the wreckage of the Titanic. It's thought the sub had a 96-hour oxygen supply. And Bukayo Saka got his first professional hat-trick last night. England thrashed North Macedonia 7-0 at Old Trafford. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Sophia Lewis-Hobbs.
This Tuesday's Euro Millions jackpot is unmissable.
Now that calls for a dance, Dermot.
Do I have to?
You can limbo. That's it.
Oh, thanks. Just call me Dermot or Limbo.
Very good.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Tuesday. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Hello, Chico. Come to Einstein.
You know I love tracking the energy we use on our smart meter display. Well, now I've found ways to help us save money on our energy bill. Like shortening showers to 4 minutes. And not leaving appliances on standby. Switch them off at the wall. Exactly. I'll track our energy use on my smart meter display.
Save energy this summer. Search Smart Energy Tips. Eligibility may vary. Consumer action required.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful
Radio.
Good morning, good evening, or even good afternoon, depending on the time zone that you are connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus. Julius Baluto, you are host, and we are coming to you wherever you are from the heart of London on Colorful Radio. Welcome, and let's embark on this journey together. Don't be left behind. Today we got great Kenyan, and he's doing quite a lot. Our focus today, biodiversity, and I'm with Kailish. Just going to give you opportunity, Kailish. Welcome to the show. Say hello to our listeners and introduce yourself, even the names, all of them. And the way you want to be known.
Julius, thank you very, very much for your kind words. My name is Kailish Patel. I'm a Kenyan origin. I've lived in the United Kingdom for a large part of my life, but I still have a beautiful home in Nanyuki in Kenya, and I spend a lot of my spare time out there. I grew up in Kenya in the early 60s and 70s. My mom and dad were born in Nakuru, and my grandfather migrated to Kenya from India at the turn of the last century. So you can say that we are the original Kenyans. Here in London, I represent the Kenya Society, Mount Kenya Trust, and the communities that are interested in Kenya as welfare. So I am very much living my life promoting Kenya.
Well, Kailish, probably what you didn't say is that you're also director and trustee of Mount Kenya Trust, our focus on diversity. And to those who don't actually understand how important it is, biodiversity is conservation schemes. And not only are we conserving the environment, we are conserving the future. Because you see, if you are able to grow up enough, old enough to see the face of a lion very clearly, the face of a giraffe very clearly, the face of an elephant very clearly. You see some trees surrounding all these wild animals, and you see wonderful nature, beautiful sceneries, green trees, all those things. They matter. But do we need to conserve them? Yes, we do. Life is not about us. It's about others, those who come, or those who come after us. And that's why it's very important what Kailash Patel is doing.
My journey in conservation started at a very early age when my father was fortunate enough to be the main contractor for the Kenya National Parks, where he was able to construct all the facilities for the national parks around Kenya and primarily in Mount Kenya. So I spent my early childhood exploring the peaks and the valleys and the forests of Mount Kenya, which I learned intimately to enjoy the biodiversity there. Over the subsequent years, with the population explosion, encroachment, climate change, we've had a severe impact on Mount Kenya. Mount Kenya is surrounded by 17 million people who are reliant on the waters of Mount Kenya. If that mountain dries up, the future would look very, very grim. So I took it upon myself in 1999 with other like-minded individuals to set up the Mount Kenya Trust, and we are determined to plant 10 million trees on Mount Kenya, which is Kenya's most important water tower. Once we have achieved the goal of planting the 10 million trees, we are hoping that that will slow down the climate change that the country is facing, and we will then move to other water towers of East Africa to repeat the same exercise. But more importantly, the biodiversity is very, very crucial. Yeah. So we are planting indigenous trees. We are not planting exotic plantations. We are not planting commercial plantations. We are planting indigenous trees to restore the eco-balance in the country. And we are also creating a biodiversity biosphere, which has been recognized by the United Nations UNESCO World Heritage Site. And we want to preserve that title. Otherwise, they can easily eject us out of that World Heritage Site title if we don't follow specific improvements.
Okay. Lots of, you know, listeners, when you're talking about Mount Kenya, we are talking about the second highest mountain, freestanding mountain in Africa. Of course, the tallest in Africa would be Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania. And after, actually, Kilimanjaro, the highest mountain in the world, the Himalayas. So you can see the importance of this. And let me get you to Kenya. See, the thing is, when you're talking about Kenya, if you grow up and you are born as Kenyan, you will never in your own dreams see snow unless you have climbed up on top of Mount Kenya. That's the only place that has been known to snow sometime. So if you grow up in Kenya, that's a place you are likely to find snow. Rest, you have to travel the rest of the world to catch up with snow. And I'll never forget my wonderful first encounter with snow here in England. Our wonderful England, very spoiled with this snow thing and all that. In Kenya, we don't see it. But, you know, I woke up one morning and in London, my first encounter with snow, and everywhere is really white everywhere. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I've never seen something like that. I went outside in a t-shirt, and as I was touching this snow, trying to figure out how it fell, funny thoughts about climate change. In my mind, which is very inquisitive, I'm thinking, they say global warming, but this snow is so cold. Where did it pass? The same sky? And when my thoughts are going like that, touching snow, I hear a very loud shout from one of the window from my neighbor. It was a lady. She was shouting at me, "Get out of there! You're gonna get yourself pneumonia! Get out of there!" And I'm like, "Oh, yes, mom." But I'd go back to my room. You know, having been told of. But I'm just using these things we take for them for granted. And they are not normal. If you grow up in Kenya, you never leave Kenya, you may never see snow in your life. So, I mean, You've been Mount Kenya. Have you ever been to the top?
I've been to Point Lenana, which is a peak that amateurs can climb on. Nilion and Betion are professional climbers only. You need to have world-class skills for rock climbing to ascend on Nilion and Betion. But Point Lenana is a fairly strenuous climb. But if you acclimatize and train hard, you can make it there in a day. But you have to be very, very careful because there's something called mountain sickness, pulmonary edema, which can affect you if you try and do it without proper training and instructions and guidance. I've played in that snow, but unfortunately that snow cap is fast receding because of global warming. It has reduced to probably about 10% of what it used to be in my childhood, and that is the urgency that we have to combat. And planting trees, attracting rainfall to the mountain may help some of the snow to remain, but the glaciers, which are compacted snow, are disappearing very fast. And if that happens, most of our rivers that flow down Mount Kenya may only turn into seasonal rivers rather than permanent flow, which would be a real tragedy for the 17 million people and the wildlife that survives on that water. So we've got to work really hard, raise awareness, and educate our children to this urgency that we all face.
And when you talk about also Mount Kenya, of course, you have also wildlife around it. What is the state? Is there a decrease or is there an increase? And when you talk again about nature, it's about ecosystem, isn't it? Because the animals, wild animals, will need water. Tourists going there also have an impact on what's going on, goes on there. How is the situation like?
So the biggest challenge we face is encroachment of the mountain. We've been forced to build a fence, an electric fence around the mountain to stop human encroachment into the forests, the indigenous rainforests that surround the mountain, because the population growth has been so rapid, the demand for firewood, the demand for land to plant crops is becoming unsustainable. So we finally had to put a fence around the mountain, which is regularly, unfortunately, cut, and invasion happens in small scale. So we have a full-time team of fence repairers who go around repairing the fence, and we need a lot of money to keep that fence workable. More importantly, the wildlife within the mountain used to traditionally migrate to other mountains and other grazing areas. With the inclusion of the fence on the mountain, they are encroached inside, and we have to create migratory corridors and underpasses and fences so that the wildlife can disperse. This is very, very important for biodiversity, and the gene pool has to be ensured to be very diverse. Otherwise, you get inbreeding, and soon that wildlife dies out. In my lifetime, I've seen the rhino disappear from Mount Kenya. There are currently no wild rhino in Mount Kenya, and probably only a handful of bongo in the mountain, which is a tragedy. When I was a child, there was not a moment when we didn't see rhinos in that mountain. Things like leopards have disappeared. Elephants are in smaller and smaller herds. So there is a big urgency to restore the balance on the mountain.
When you look into man-animal interactions, I know in some national parks in Kenya, like Masai Mara, you have a shared space whereby people live in the same national park with animals, like the Masai community from Kenya. Would you say, when you look into that, is sustainable, and is it affected by the biodiversity issues there? And if you look at the Maasai, they have to keep cattle, and you have lions around. Lions feed on meat. Conflict.
So the difference between a mountain environment and a savanna environment is that there are pastoralist communities that exist in the Maasai Mara, where they have cattle that just graze on the grasslands, and the land is so expansive that wild animals can share the habitat with human settlement. Unfortunately, on a mountain, with the terrain being so rough and varied and difficult, the animals need to have high quantities of grazing of different kind, especially trees and leaves and shrubs. And because agricultural encroachment is now moving very, very rapidly into the mountain environment, the crops that are grown in those agricultural plots are very, very juicy and tender for animals, and they constantly invade those farmlands to raid those crops. And that's why currently we have a great deal of human-wildlife conflict out there. And that has caused the Kenya Wildlife Service to issue lots and lots of compensation to the victims of wildlife damage. And that is literally draining all the vital resources that are supposed to be there to look after the wildlife. Instead, the money is going to alleviate human-wildlife conflict compensation, which is, you know, something that one has to be aware of.
Colorful
radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
And in Kenya, many national parks, they got the electric fence, supposedly to stop animals from leaving their usual habitat. How is it like? Does it work, or does it affect people as well, if you didn't know?
The fences are an unnatural barrier. For millions of years, wildlife and humanity have coexisted, but in smaller numbers as far as human beings are concerned. Now that the population in Kenya is one of the highest birth rates in the world, this issue has now become a big, big challenge. The wildlife needs to disperse. They are migratory animals. They go from different grazing grounds on a seasonal basis. If they are put inside a fenced environment, they damage the fence, they break the fence, and raid surrounding farmland, and they become a nuisance. So the cohabitation formula ends up becoming a very, very difficult challenge. And we've created specific underpasses on highways. We've created specific migratory corridors where we've linked one biodiversity rangeland with the mountain. So in Kenya, we've got an underpass at Imenti Forest in Meru. We've got another underpass between Timau and Isiolo. We are in the planning stages of creating more underpasses around the mountain so that animals can migrate to different habitats on a seasonal basis and stop being a nuisance to humans. So we are trying very, very hard to ensure that the societies around the mountain benefit from the wildlife dispersal.
Yeah, having talked about that, I think maybe we just want to catch up with other things you have done before we come to focus more on your passion in what you're doing, and we'll keep talking more about it.
So my passion at the moment is everything to do with Kenya. So I am a treasurer of the Kenya Society, which is a group of professionals who have held functions and meetings for the last 31 years in London. And we are very, very keen to promote the Kenya-UK partnership, the Kenya-UK education partnership, the Kenya-UK cultural partnership, and basically be mentors to young Kenyan students coming into the UK to universities, where then we can find them internships in job opportunities while they have finished their higher education, university education. So that's one of them. There's a new passion that I have, which I've recently joined. It's called the Kenya Drylands Education Fund. It is primarily based in what used to be known as NFD, Northern Frontier District, but which is now all the pastoralist semi-desert areas of northern Kenya. What we are doing there is we are discouraging child marriages, rescuing girls from child marriages and promoting education, and we're creating boarding schools and safe houses for these girls and boys to have formal education so they can, you know, break the cycle of poverty which is so prevalent in the northern part of Kenya. So we've got international donors who work with us to promote water projects, school building programs, clinics, and the Kenya Dryland Education Fund has become a beacon of hope in that very, very deprived part of Kenya, unfortunately, which has been neglected since independence by successive governments.
Indeed. And then when we talk about currently Mount Kenya Trust, the passion, what was the, what got you into the very beginning of it, and what did you want to see change, or if I may, you wanted to make a difference too?
So as a child, as I repeated, I saw a beautiful heavenly environment where it rained every single day of the year at between noon and 2 p.m. Every single day we had rain, and it used to create a pristine heavenly environment, and that over time, over the last 50 years, has slowly receded to the point where we now have extremely dry weather patterns and the rivers dry up. I have a river at the bottom of my garden which has never dried up before, and this year was the first time in its life that it had actually stopped flowing, which broke my heart. The idea of restoring Mount Kenya's pristine environment is now my main driving passion. I want to make sure that I educate all the people who live around the mountain. We run a very, very successful education program for children where we promote school feeding programs, where we promote early childhood health, where we promote clean water facilities, where we promote planting seedlings in school compounds, so that the hunt for firewood doesn't go into the forested areas. Rather, the firewood for their school kitchens is harvested from their own wood lot within the school compounds. We put in water tanks in all the schools that surround the mountain. We have outreach workers going on motorbikes to educate the health screening programs that we have, where we are doing primary health care, things like diabetic screening, family planning, cancer screening, HIV screening. So we have all these outreach workers who, teams of them, who are, you know, educating the rural masses, and we're trying to tell them that, look, the mountain will provide as long as you do your bit.
So, in essence, you are telling us that the motivation to the motivation to community to engage, you come up with all these different other projects. Is that the case?
Yes. A partnership. We are, you know, reminding them that they're very, very fortunate to be residents around this beautiful mountain that can always provide, as long as everybody, you know, participates in the tree planting campaign. Tree is life. Trees, planted trees, draw moisture to the mountain, and planted trees allow the moisture to be retained in the mountain and percolate down slowly rather than rush off into the ocean when there is no ground cover. So what you've got to remember is that the moment you plant a tree, you are securing that future around that vicinity. And if we do it in a large scale, there's a very good chance that we could slow down climate change. There's a very good chance that we could reverse a bit of the climate change. I cannot predict how rapidly all the climatic factors are going to happen in the future. But by planting trees, we can really make a little bit of difference. And I've seen it successive in very great success in other parts of the world when I visited other eco projects. And I can sincerely hope that we can do the same in Kenya, which is in a very urgent state of disrepair.
We have seen contested positions when it comes to climate change. Critics, some of them say it's hoax, some of them say it's conspiracy by systems to keep getting money from people, seeing it as a form of different taxation. Some saying there's no substance in it. Come to UK, for example. You drive around in central London, your car must be ULEX compliant. You pay for congestion charge. But when it comes to accountability, a lot of motorists in London keep claiming no one is accountable. No one tells us all this money that has been collected, what that money has been used to practically do in controlling climate change or reducing the impact of pollution. And there are so many other examples. You're going to shop in London, you have to buy, you have to purchase a carrier bag from the supermarket. In the name that money generated is from the selling of the bags given back to government. Government never comes back, tells citizens, we collected £1 billion through the sales of the carrier bags in supermarkets, and we used that money to build more windmills, or maybe to enlarge, to harvest wind power. So therefore people think, oh, talk about the air miles when you fly out of the country. They're still talking about this is a form of taxation, and some say nature is what it is. What's going to be will be. Let it be. Is that the position people should have?
If you deny climate change, you are in a minority, in my opinion. Increasingly, the younger generations are noticing the difference in the climatic conditions. When I came to this country in the early 70s, our winters were very, very cold. I remember nobody used to have double glazing on their windows. And at night, when the heating was off, the central heating was off, the inside of the window would freeze over. So when you woke up in the morning, there was icicles on the inside of the window. And that's how cold winters used to be. Nowadays, last year, we only had one day of snow in London, which shows to you the climate change and its impact. In Kenya, we try to keep things simple by saying that if we get the tree cover to more than 10% of the landmass, then there is a very, very good chance that we will attract the right level of rain, we will not lose topsoil, we will keep the moisture in the ground, and we'll be able to become fully self-sufficient in food production. And that is our goal, to create an environment that is habitable, that is enjoyable, where coexistence happens. I understand people's frustration with taxation and the green economy and all the ULEZ and other factors that are being brought in by governments. But I think governments are reacting very, very wisely to the urgency of climate change. And I think one should not frustrate their efforts to slow down climate impact. Eventually, if we don't do it, there's a gun at our head and we could tip over into a cycle of complete Armageddon. Which is a horrendous way of describing the climate change. If people have noticed, there have been wildfires in Canada that completely covered New York, wildfires on the west coast of America, wildfires in Australia, floods in Europe. All these were at an unprecedented scale simply because the eco-balance in the environment has been altered, and we've got to slow that down, just to be aware of.
This is Colorful Radio.
Colorful Radio.
Colorful.
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 Genius.
Colorful Radio.
Last year I went to my village and in Kenya, and happens to be I come from where continuous mountain ranges in different parts come and converge, and they separate again, forming a very big valley. That valley goes for like almost 11 kilometers long, but is so mushy water from the ground forever. It's been like that. Even in the most severe drought, that place has never run out of water. It's where tractors will come fetch water to take to school, secondary schools around. And it's been like that. But when I went to trace back the actual source of all that water, I found it's already moved by, let's say, about almost 500 meters from where it used to be.
So it is receding.
Exactly. And I was actually surprised and shocked. I'm like, maybe one day all that mushy ground in the valley may disappear. And it's scary.
It's happened in various parts of Kenya. The colonial British brought an exotic tree called eucalyptus to Kenya at the turn of the last century to dry up marshes and swamps because they wanted to plant crops. Unfortunately, that tree became a menace. Currently, those trees are sucking all essential moisture from the ground. The Kenya Forest Service is discouraging the planting of eucalyptus trees around river valleys and around riparian ground. But profit-seeking, what I would call agroforestry individuals, are planting these eucalyptus trees on their landscape just to harvest them very, very rapidly. Unfortunately, what it does is it sucks water from neighboring communities. It poisons the land with its resin that falls from its leaves, and the land eventually becomes unsustainable. So the word eucalyptus, in my opinion, is one of the worst environmental disasters that has fallen on Africa, especially Kenya. We need to banish that particular tree from our landscape. It is an exotic species that is not natural in our environment. And it is a dangerous tree that falls down in the severe storms and kills a lot of people with its very shallow root structure. So, you know, this is one of the human interventions that have been very, very adverse in our environment. So typical example of your river valley drying up. Maybe there are a lot of eucalyptus trees there, and that's why the water line is receding. Go and look next time you're there to see if there are any eucalyptus trees there.
Yeah, it's amazing. And of course, now you're from Mount Kenya, of course, at least water and all that. And we're talking about, again, to see the climate change from a different perspective and away from the critics. You realize that in Kenya, there was a very prolonged severe drought. I think almost, is it 4 seasons? It didn't rain at all. And sometime it will rain a bit. You plant crops. Before they mature, rain goes away. 4 seasons with no harvest. I went to Kenya last year. I saw animals in the national parks were dying. Was that the same as even Mount Kenya area as well?
Yes, we had the pastoralist communities from northern Kenya invading the forest itself with their camels and their cows. And those cows and camels were not accustomed to that extremely cold weather. And although they were grazing on the mountain, they were dying of pneumonia. And it was shocking to see how many animals died. But again, this is a problem of human greed. Those animal herds, the unsustainable vast herds of camels and sheep and goats, are not owned by all those communities. They're owned by a few cattle barons sitting in Nairobi and employing all these communities to herd all their vast unsustainable levels of pastoralist animals, which are eating all vegetation to the point they're even pulling the roots out. So when we get a rainfall, there's no root crop available to sustain the landscape. And you find that the desertification is so rapid. This is something I've noticed all over northern Kenya. When I used to go there as a child, we would have miles and miles and miles of hardwood forests with beautiful grazing and agriculture, had pastoralist communities that were well settled and content. And now all you see is warfare, tribal skirmishes, you know, raiding parties with, you know, stealing of camels and killing of innocent people. And the government is not really able to control the environment. And it is all environmental. The factors are all environmental rather than anything else. The resources have all dried up. And, you know, people in the cities don't really understand why all that happens. But it's the climate change, the lack of grazing, the vast number of animals that are required by the communities sitting in urban areas interested in Nyama Choma, and the charcoal that is used to roast those Nyama Choma. The thorn trees all around northern Kenya have been felled. Most of the charcoal has been exported to the Middle East, where it's prized for its excellent barbecue quality. And, you know, do we want our countries to turn into another Saudi Arabia? If you look at Somalia from the air, there is no trees left in Somalia. And Kenya could easily become something like that. And do we really want that? It's at our doorstep what is happening. Do we eventually want that to happen to Kenya? We have to be very careful. Very, very careful.
Now then, that you're already in the business of all these projects and all that, and Kenya, you know, congrats to, or maybe credit to the Constitution and devolution, introduction of county governments and all that. Do you find it easy to maybe collaborate your projects, or are there things you do in partnership with the county government of within the area of Mount Kenya?
There are a few bright examples, but very few. What has happened with devolution has become a very bloated bureaucracy. So you've got layers and layers of officialdom that require huge amount of persuasion to even get anything moving. So instead of really benefiting the communities and the environment, a lot of it is self-feeding frenzy. So I'm not a great fan of devolution and the bloated bureaucracy it has created, because, you know, in every small county you have a minister for the ecosystem, and under him you have two secretaries and then about 20 other bureaucrats, and what they're doing is collecting salaries. On the ground, you see very little difference. You don't see them out on the field promoting any environmental progress, and it is left to private organizations and charities like us to really make an impact, and we can barely scratch the surface. The vast majority of the urgent requirements have been left, you know, untouched, and that is a real disaster.
Yeah, but do you think governments in Africa understand the impact of climate change? See, the thing is, the Westerners, of course, they're the biggest polluters, okay? We talking about China, talking about US, talk about Europe, Africa, when you compare, they are less polluting than all these other parties. But do you think our government understands what we are facing?
I think the problem we have is in Africa, the belief amongst politicians is, it is my turn to eat. So the way the power structures are organized is that politicians elected to high office, and instead of advancing the progress of the country, he replenishes his pockets to ensure that the next time around he is able to retain his seat. And that is a very, very fractured way of running a country or politics, or running the whole ecosystem of politics in Africa. My turn to eat, or it is our turn to eat, is a ridiculous imposition that has been placed upon politics in Africa. And the environment and poverty levels have heightened. Environment has suffered and poverty levels have heightened since independence, instead of getting better. You know, at independence in Kenya, our GDP was higher than South Korea and Singapore. And look where those countries have left us. What are they today compared to what Kenya is? So this is something to wake up to and try and remember that my turn to eat is the wrong way to look at things. Obviously, it is very important to continue to pursue Western countries who have been the main source of pollution and climate change to offer support to African countries to enhance the financial stability and to reduce poverty levels. And we have to pursue them at all costs, constantly make them feel guilty about what they've done to the African continent and remind them that it is important that they support all the positive steps that we are interested in taking forward. And fortunately enough, our main source of donations for Mount Kenya Trust originate from Western countries. We rarely get any contribution locally or from the African continent. So I can say that we are doing our bit for environment conservation by passing that guilt along. And, you know, when I hold lectures about the plight of the environment out there are some people who actually have tears because they have a conscience. A couple of years ago, we held a big fundraising event in central London, and we showed a film of our activity in Mount Kenya, which is available on our website, and most of the audience in there were in tears because they understood the urgency and they understood how difficult it is to keep things going. And I had a huge avalanche of donations from total strangers who I'd never met before. So there is a bit of conscience available in the Western countries. Unfortunately, you don't see much of that on the ground level in Africa, which is quite sad. Just to be aware of.
This is Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
The youth is the future, because within the Mount Kenya Trust, credit to you, you're doing great work. But in what ways are you embracing the youths to carry the baton?
So, we, as I mentioned earlier, we have education classes, film shows, demonstration days with our teams of workers out on the field where they go to schools. We take children on tours of the mountain, the forests around the mountain. We take them to our tree seedling nurseries and show them what we're doing with planting indigenous trees and how we're using fast-growing varieties so that we can replenish the tree cover very, very quickly on Mount Kenya. We're educating them and offering them support so that their parents are not under pressure to look for school fees. And the easiest way of looking for school fees is to cut that tree at the bottom of the garden, turn it into charcoal, or sell it to a sawmiller and make school fees available. So we are trying to discourage those kind of hazardous activities. We're also telling them that certain agricultural practices are unsustainable and that they should, you know, try and look at drought-resistant crops, crops that are marketable in an easier manner rather than water-hungry crops that, are susceptible to droughts. So we're educating them on the ground level, teaching this at schools all around Mount Kenya, with an excellent track record. And when we talk to foreign donors about the activities we have for children, we get a very enthusiastic response. So one of the big success stories is that we give every school child a hot meal at middle of the day, and a full stomach gives a healthy mind, which we think is our biggest success. So educating children is how we are going to progress this campaign of ours.
And away from what you do, which is very important, and yeah, keep doing that, do you think our school systems are doing enough to create awareness, especially to the youths, about climate change?
Well, there is a struggle to just survive. Sometimes climate change doesn't take the priority it deserves. There is a lot of challenges for children with rising poverty levels. The environment at home can remain unstable. The school curriculum sometimes gets constantly modified to suit certain agendas. So what we always feel is that we are constantly finding things changing too rapidly for our comfort, and what we want is a focused emphasis on climate change as part of the curriculum. Currently, we don't see that or any urgency in putting that into the mainstream, and we urge the government authorities to give that as a separate curriculum subject, climate change, so that these young children can benefit when they are adults. If we don't do it now, they'll never see the benefits. So I certainly urge the Ministry of Education to bring in climate change as a separate curriculum subject in the school curriculum on a daily basis. And, we are there to support them. We can get enough support from external sources to create these ideas. I think climate change is already a mainstream subject here in the UK and in Western countries. And it should be rolled out with urgency in Kenya.
So true. Then you see people look at what you do, young people, they're like, I want to be like Kalesh when I grow up. I just want to do what he does. He looks okay. Has it been that smooth running?
Well,
there are challenges.
There are too many distractions to the young people in this day and age. So you get very short attention spans because the distractions are so many. Social media, the keeping up with the Joneses, the gadgets that one has at their disposal, the enormous influence of TikTok, Facebook, and all those. We are trying to use those mediums to constantly bombard them with climate change, but it is a bit of a struggle. So I am not that confident that we are getting the message through to the young people in the right manner that we want to. But I think they have to really start at grassroots. So it has to be brought in from a very, very early age, so that it is part of their DNA by the time they're able to have a conversation with me or somebody like me. They're well conversed in what is really happening, and that is important.
If we go back to Kenya, one of the things I remember when I was like growing up, and I credit to the former president, Daniel Moi, he crisscrossed the country planting trees. And all these campaign to prevent soil erosion, it was very much in the minds of young people that time. So I look around now. Yes, we have all these global setups. Leaders who leave Africa, go to other countries, attend these meetings, talk about climate change. But it's a message going down to the people that matter most.
So Moi had a initial, it was called Nyayo era. I was in Kenya doing that Nyayo area, and Moi was very enthusiastic about planting trees, but unfortunately the trees that were planted were eucalyptus.
Oh, were they?
And exotic species which were harvested for personal gain at the expense of the environment. So when Moi started his campaigns, the country was still in a reasonably pristine condition. The same country now is full of big, big gullies, big, big voids, big, big desertified areas. A typical example is if you use the SGR railway from Nairobi to Mombasa, as you're traveling towards Mombasa, on the right-hand side, privately owned ranches and fenced compounds are full of greenery and forests and very, very beautiful landscape. You look on the left-hand side and there's red soil for 200 miles, with gullies, with erosion, with barely any vegetation present. This is a stark reminder of how wrong our environmental protection policy has evolved. And, you know, I challenge anybody to tell me otherwise, because this is something I have witnessed very recently. And as a child, when I used to go on that train journey, the train would constantly have to stop to let elephant herds pass. And if we stopped at a particular point, we would see herds, prides of lions running along the railway line. So all that is now a thing of the past. We only see elephants in the Sawa National Park. And even those are a few, nothing like what I used to see as a child. So that is a typical example of environmental disaster in the making. And most of that has been created by unsustainable grazing herds of cattle, which Kenya is obsessed with, unfortunately.
Wow. So what do you think then should be the challenges that we need to focus on as Kenyans on the ground? What the challenges that are right in front of us that we need to address, government needs to focus on?
So I felt that owning very, very large and unsustainable herds of cattle and sheep and goats is one form of money laundering. So when illegal gains are made in commerce in terms of fake contracts and tenders and stuff, what is the quickest way of hiding that money? Go and buy cattle, go and buy sheep, go and buy goats, leave them out in the government rangelands, and let a few of your workmen look after them. And if anybody asks, how come you have such a large herd? All you say is, I was very successful in breeding program. These are all from two animals. And you have managed to evade money laundering issues. So Kenya's hidden wealth went into pastoralist cattle and goats and sheep. And today we are paying the price for an environment that has been completely stripped of vegetation. Now, the urban areas, eating nyama choma has become an obsession. I think Kenya needs to really address how many nyama choma butcheries and eating joints they're going to authorize. If you go along the highway through Thika all the way to Makuyu and further up, all you see is lines and lines of nyama choma joints. And you can imagine half of that nyama choma is not only cattle and sheep, but bushmeat.
Bushmeat as well.
Trapped from, the mountain. My staff collect close to 50 to 100 snares every single day from the mountain.
Wow.
And we find so many trapped animals that are waiting to be collected by the poachers. It is the biggest menace. Bushmeat has, taken over in Africa in a very big scale. People, when they're eating roast meat, they don't really know what they're eating.
Wow.
So this is a terrible urgency.
There's no way government can regulate that?
Well, if the government functionaries themselves are hungry, what are they going
to do?
Even
more nyama choma.
Yeah. it's successive generations of mismanagement has created an environment like this, where there's no civic pride, there's no loyalty to the country, there's no accountability. Everybody for themselves. And we are working in that kind of environment, trying to educate, trying to make aware. Sometimes we are called stupid because they're saying, it's my turn to eat, don't interfere.
Stop making noise.
Yeah.
You're not welcome on the table.
Yeah.
You change the taste of the nyama choma.
Absolutely.
You keep
absolutely.
Making noise.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Yes.
We do hope probably then things will change. But with the work that you are doing, I think is creating awareness. What do you think is there are more challenges? Do you look at the future with optimism or pessimism?
I look at it with optimism all the time, because otherwise I would curl up and die. Might as well curl up and die, and that's not something I'm prepared to do. My father lived a long, happy life, and he worked with various charities himself, and I want to follow his footsteps and ensure that I leave the Kenyan landscape in a better place, no matter what.
That's a very noble goal, and yes, it's, we do hope things will change. And yeah, if we have a few more like you, definitely things will change. Probably you need to
when I
set
talk,
a franchise. I'm just joking.
When I talk with passion like what I've just described, yeah. I get very enthusiastic responses from people who live in this country, who are Kenyans, who love their country, and they always ask me, how do I help? How can I join? What can I do? And that is my job, to make the Kenyan diaspora in the UK aware of the problems back at home.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you're doing, and it's been great, great pleasure to host you on Colorful Radio, our Africa in Focus, and of course it's just beginning. Definitely would love to have you another time.
I just want to add that some of the political comments I made are my personal views and not the views of Mount Kenya Trust. My fellow trustees and committee members and the management do not share my personal views. So please ensure that this is not the view of Mount Kenya Trust.
Thank you for that disclaimer. Very important. Yeah, so our listeners, we've been with Kailash Patel, and of course he's a director, trustee of Mount Kenya Trust. They're doing great work in Kenya and protect environment and all that, conserve nature for the future generation. And today's been our talk about biodiversity.
Africa in Focus.
Blunts of grass made back on the dash, 40 karat gold Cartier on the class. New coats for shooters, tinted the Land Cruisers. My maneuvers sparking these little rumors. Duffel bag, the Rugers still the smoothest. I roughing up all the jewelers. Danny Glover up the. She's undercover. Propositions and proposals. Bring them on the double. Raisin, the K's in, the day's in. Jalen, that brain is amazing. Top tier, egotistical and the arrogant. Skyscraper, kilo up in the cabinet. For bad lines the fourth time. So rock wide blue dot, you should call mine. East Coast fat boy, he be so raggedocious. Air Forces, mansions in them on the ocean. Benefits, feed my. I'm talking fishing grits, immigrants came a long way up out the tenements. Gunshots, hereditary, you can daddy bury. Wait for March, got out of prison February. Cold game, Menage trois in my gold chain. Bad boy Bugattis in all four lanes.